arranged for a... I'm not fond of our president. He arranged for two people to raise international funds for the tsunami victims. One of them was former president, two former presidents, Bill Clinton and his father, Bush Sr. So, because Bill Clinton is a kind of like a celebrity kind of a personality, he considered one way to raise international money is to get on a talk show in America that was arranged, one of the popular, I don't know which one, talk shows. And he's a very smart man. He invited as co-guests on the show leaders from different religious organizations representative around the world. And they were requested to answer, as starters, answer one, because they were prepared to answer one question. How can something like this happen? From the different religious points of view on national television. I didn't see the show. I didn't even know it happened. Someone told me they saw a good part of it. And there, they made three comments. One comment was they weren't impressed at all with anything the religious leaders of the world had to say. Very unconvincing. Second thing was probably the most compelling thing that was spoken by Bill Clinton. So what did Bill Clinton have to say? Said, well, one thing we can see from all of this is that there's a controller more powerful than all of us. And the commentator said, and that is spoken by a person who formerly was one of the most powerful controllers on this planet. And he's saying, looking around, that there is a controller beyond all controllers. I don't know how profound that is, but that's what he said. I guess that says relatively what are the other things that were said, how profound they were. But everyone who is a controller is controlled. And there's one of, and then that controller has no other source of control but themselves. And the time energy is that invincible, inexorable energy that controls all events. And for those who are properly using and those who are misusing free will alike, without error, everyone receives their deserve. And the third thing that they remarked specifically about this conversation on the television show was that all the animals went to a position of safety before the tsunami arrived. Somehow, the thought that they shared with me was this just shows how not in tune with nature the humans are for all of their intelligence and all their sophistication. Even the elephants that were chained, they ripped out the chain from the ground and just marched up the high ground. And all the insects and all the birds and all the wildlife, they cleared out. And the humans were playing on their fiddles while Rome burned. You know that saying? What's his name? Was fiddling while Rome burned. You've heard that saying before? Nero was playing his fiddle while Rome was burning. So anyway, there's some saying like that. They were just engaged in their everyday life while calamity was coming their way. there's messages that the animals picked up. Danger is coming. And humans who are in this situation where the illusory energy is bewildering them so intensely, the calamity, the ultimate calamity that death is approaching, people just don't get it. And we make so many expenditures of time and money to make provisions for the future. What about this one? Actually, the whole progressive way of Vedic life, it also has that built-in message. Sometimes people ask the question, if devotional service is the only way to understand Krishna, and Krishna can only be understood through devotional service, why is there instruction to do anything else? Why is there all this other stuff that's within the scriptures? And all that other stuff that's within the scriptures is because there's a large number of people, a percentage of people, that will not surrender to Krishna. Give them the option, surrender to Krishna or nothing, and they'll take nothing. And that's what they've got. They've got a nothing situation. Like the statement that Prabhupada made, there's two ways to touch your nose. There's this one, and then there's this one. And you can do it. It's just very difficult. But some people won't do this one. They'll have to do this one. And so the Vedic processes that explain, you have this desire, do it nicely. Here's this Vedic sacrifice. You have to have association with the Brahman, who is expert in performance of the Vedic yajnas, and you make some sacrifice, some charity, and you do this procedure, that procedure, and if you're very fortunate, you have a very qualified Brahmana, you'll get that fulfilled desire, the karmakanda. But with karmakanda, there's several indirect around the backside benefits. One is immediately there's acceptance of the authority of the Vedas, and the Vedas come from Krishna. So it's like if someone's in the back of the room and I can't touch that someone in the back of the room, I can take a long stick and put a little glove on the end of the stick and shake hands. But it's not direct. Contact is indirect. So this karmakanda is indirect, but nonetheless, the Vedas are coming from Krishna. So there's an acceptance of authority indirectly of Krishna. And there's another benefit. There's contact with a qualified Brahman. An unqualified Brahman doesn't make any difference anyways, but a qualified Brahman. Then there's elevation. By association, there's elevation. One is gradually, by acceptance of those karmakanda rituals, through contact with a qualified Brahman, elevation. Then another thing, there's the notion that if I do something now, there's benefit that comes in the future. And then one begins to think of the benefit of the future of the heavenly realm, not just benefit in this life. And then when there's understanding of the heavenly realm after this realm, there's a more clear, less theoretical, more clear motivation to achieve something after this life. And then there's a clear distinction that I continue after this life. I exist beyond this life. Happiness, reality, my own very self is something beyond this life. One becomes naturally, through elevation and purification, tuned into that which is eternal. Ever so gradual and perhaps even imperceptible to the performer. but they're brought to that notion of the eternal. And the agency of the Vedas is that which brings that about. What do the Vedas say about the eternal? And so one is led into the realm that is eternal, at least a knowledge of, and a greater acceptance of. And that's for those who are moving in the direction of proper use of free will. Krishna is the delivering agent. He creates the situation. He creates the means of getting out of the situation. And he's the one who delivers one from that situation. So it's indirect, but the ultimate is, again, surrender to Krishna. So just sarvadharmam prajajamame kam sharanam braja. Or, if you don't hear that one, it's the surrender to Krishna indirectly. And the one who oversees the just arrangements of Prakriti, that's Super Soul. And the agency through which Super Soul is moving Prakriti is time. It's one of the five topics of Bhagavad Gita. It's one of the five topics of existence. Understanding properly what is time. It's a fascinating topic. And Kunti's got it down. She who says, I'm just a less intelligent woman, she's very clearly understanding Krishna's position. My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. Now, as before, as in the introductory verses, this uncertainty that Kunti has about Krishna being all-pervasive or localized. Here it is again. Hint, it's a theme. Because Krishna has different features. And Kunti has a little difficulty. She gets a little bewildered by moving from one feature to another feature. The localized feature, there he is. That he is exists as the super soul and time energy, that's not a problem. That's localized and personal. This all-pervasive feature. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. We touched upon this in advance. The previous verse was how Krishna gives shelter to the monists. He gives shelter to his devotees. He is a loving father. He gives shelter to all living beings. Monists, devotees, crazy, lazy, everybody. He's neutral. He's a father. He has affection for everyone. All of his part and parcel living entities. However, some receive calamities. And even in the devotee, non-devotee category, both receive calamities. Both receive them in different ways according to the consciousness they carry. From Krishna's position, there is no one who is Priya.
As we have been looking at, for they are all predestined by destiny. By super souls, prophets. Some people don't like the idea of destiny.
Because then it seems like, or they don't understand it. They don't, yeah. When people don't like something, it's often because they have a misunderstanding of that something. The minister who was describing to me is giving a lecture at a university, and one man was well-educated atheist, and he was a vocal, loud, well-educated atheist. So, you know, it was one of those situations where it was obvious the guy was going to dominate what was going on. So he decided he would just address the man correctly. Just like that'd be a sideshow for everything else he was doing.
Appreciate if you would tell me what is that God, that conception of God, that you don't believe in. And before you do, I'll share with you, I probably don't believe in him either. And then when we're done, I'll tell you the conception of God that I have and see if you don't believe in him. And sure enough, the man described the God that Ravindra said, you know, I went through the same thing when I was growing up. That person who was like this and like that, and the scriptures say like this and like that, and I couldn't relate. I can't place my faith in such a person. Had I not come in contact with Krishna consciousness, I would have been like you, an atheist. I can't believe in that person. I don't want to take shelter in that person. Now here's a description of Krishna. And when he finished the description of Krishna, the man said, I can take shelter of Krishna. So for some, time is fearful. And if they surrender to God at all, it's because they're going to get whooped if they don't. Motivation by fear is for less intelligent, and motivation by knowledge is far more attractive. It's far more enduring. And from Krishna's statements of Bhagavad Gita, such a person is most dear to him. Out of all the persons who take shelter of him. Everyone is suffering, enjoying the results of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living beings in course of social intercourse. So this is another statement that Kunti makes. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. What this means is like, you know, particle A bumping into particle B. And that's called social intercourse. Because we're living entities with desires for enjoyment apart from Krishna, we bump into another living entity that has a different type of desire of enjoyment apart from Krishna. And there's this point of friction when there's a collision. It may be that we both desire the same part of Krishna's territory. I want to enjoy matter this way, and somebody else wants to enjoy the same piece of matter that way. And so there's friction. But that's just due to this time energy. If time energy was properly utilized, or if free will was properly utilized, particle A and particle B would simply want Krishna's interest. And it would harmonize all living beings.
first lectures I heard Prabhupada speak was on this point. And it was very early when Prabhupada had come to America, and so, like some of you are probably having a hard time understanding the way that I speak English, because you're used to hearing English spoken in a different way. Of course, I'm used to hearing, this is English. Born in America, this is English. What's the problem? You may speak a funny way, but I speak English. So I couldn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. So I had to listen to the recording of the lecture over and over again. But as I listened to the recording over and over again, the details of what Prabhupada said was typically very simple and very profound. So the example that he gave was, he was giving the example of devotional service, harmonizing everything. So he described, supposing in the middle of the room we had a pond of water, and each person in the room was given one pebble, one little stone. And someone threw their stone in the middle of the pond, and what would happen? Concentric circles would form and expand until the concentric circles clash, and then you have some conflict. And then on the count of three, we're all throw our pebbles into the pond. You have a big mess. But supposing we all identified one place that we would all place our little pebble. One by one. Boom, boom, boom. What happens? The concentric circles amplify one another. And Prabhupada said, this is Krishna consciousness. But in this world, people try in artificial ways to establish a center that they all agree on. A political ideology, maybe. Some ism, some ideology or doctrine or something. Like some years ago in America, it was a thing to do. It was trendy to form communes where people would live together centered on some idea or a person. And they all fell apart because it was an arbitrary or artificial center that they placed their little pebble to place it there. That after some time, dissension arose because they drifted from their idea of what should be the center. The commune fell apart. Nations fall apart. History is filled with people coming together and coming apart in different ways. Even for generations, dynasties may come, but they all have gone. Rules of nations have come and gone. So in a shorter span of time, people are together, and just as Prabhupada is saying, Kunti is saying, dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. Except for those who use their free will properly. The natural center for all of us is a life of devotion to Krishna. We can be completely our own individuality. No problem. The individuality is no problem. Diversity, it exists within God, and it exists within the creation of God. It's not a problem. Diversity is not a problem. Losing our center, that's the problem. Where do we repose our energy? Where do we invest consciousness? That's the key consideration. destiny is made by the living beings in the course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, he is known also as the eternal time, Kala. Quincy's quite a philosopher, huh? She said so much in such a short statement. She really understands Krishna. And she really understands Krishna's creation. And she really understands how we as devotees should relate to Krishna. She understands how non-devotees are not properly relating to Krishna. Anarto Pashamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksa Jay. She understands the remedial method of correcting that problem, of the anarta problem, the unwanted things in this, in our experience of life problem. It's bringing things back into the alignment with Krishna. So the next verse, maybe I should pause and let you do the translation. I'll just introduce the next verse. She amplifies the feature of Krishna's impartiality. So this is three verses in a row dealing with Krishna's impartiality. He's impartial to the monists. He's impartial to everyone. And the fact that some living entities can and some living entities cannot understand Krishna, it's not his partiality. It's their proper use or misuse of free will. The channel for understanding Krishna is open for everybody. The channel for going back to Godhead is open for everybody. All souls are eligible. Proper use of free will is a requirement. Go ahead. 9. Kunti is saying, O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human, and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. So there's two ideas here. The inconceivable nature of Krishna's pastimes. This is one of the themes of this section. Kunti is expanding on the unique and transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. So, he appears to be human, although he's unborn. He performs activities as if human, but his activities are fully transcendental, not human. They're not subject to time. They're not subject to the modes of material nature. They're not at all temporary, although they have appearance to be like that. And there are some that there's a rare few that understand the transcendental nature of Krishna, and others don't. And when that some do and some don't, it's not Krishna's partiality. That's how the two connect. So, in the purport, Prabhupada chooses to address mainly this partiality, impartiality subject. Because it's a pathway, if properly understood, to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna. Although he acts differently with different beings, it's not because of his partiality. It's because of how people regard him, just like the question from this afternoon or this morning. Receiving Krishna's mercy, it's available at all times, just like sunshine is available everywhere. If one chooses to hide under a rock, you won't see sunshine. Come out from under the rock, there's sunshine. It's always there, readily available. Krishna's mercy is readily available. The opportunity to understand Krishna is also accessible impartially for anyone. There are distinctions, just like Krishna makes distinctions, even though he sees no distinctions. He sees with spiritual vision. He also sees different people are using their free will differently. Therefore, Spriyo Vaisishta Sadru Shudras Tepiyanti Paramgatim. He's announcing, although there are different positions, everyone has this equal opportunity employer. You have that phrase here in America, in India. It's the phrase in America. We are an equal opportunity employer. It's, you know, liberal. Everyone can be hired by us. Women can be hired, blacks can be hired, this one can be hired, equal opportunity employer. We follow the laws of freedom of America, equal opportunity. So Krishna is an equal opportunity employer. Everyone can take access to his shelter. Even people sinful, they can become freed from their sinful reactions, just take shelter of him. In the purport, I'll just read a few things, because Prabhupada is going on a certain logical line of presentation. To understand Krishna, which is where the purport begins, one needs to understand the transcendental nature of the method of approaching Krishna. Because you approach Krishna through devotional service, and thereby realize Krishna, one has to have proper regard of what devotional service is. In order to take up devotional service in the right way, in the right mood, to realize Krishna. So, Prabhupada writes that foolish people think that this thing called devotional service is just one of the ways they think is it's just flattery to get what you want. Call it what it is. It's just flattery. Hiranyakashipu spoke like that when he was pacifying his relatives after the death of Hiranyaksha. First, he did this whole very profound analysis of the temporary and eternal, the understanding the soul is eternal, understanding the body is temporary, and one should not lament over the loss of the temporary. Stay fixed in the eternal. Long description. Then he went into this whole thing about Lord Vishnu. He said, actually, he has an attitude problem with Lord Vishnu. So he said, actually, Vishnu is just this, it's like a little child. People come to him and they flatter him and praise him, and he gets all filled with feeling good about their flattery and their praise. And so he just falls all over himself trying to help those people that flatter him. That's the kind of personality Vishnu is. And then, so there's the person who gets flattered, and there's the person to do the flattering. Devotional service is just a bunch of flattery. Some people think like that, so they can get some special mercy from Krishna. And so Prabhupada addresses that conception, misconception. Actually, the pure devotees who are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are not a mercantile community. A mercantile house renders service to someone in exchange for values. The pure devotee does not render service unto the Lord for such exchange, and therefore the full mercy of the Lord is open for him. Now, Prabhupada is going to go into the distinction between a mixed devotee and a pure devotee. A mixed devotee is, they serve the Lord and they do have some wants. And the nature of such mixed devotee is, when those wants are fulfilled, and see you later, Krishna. Doesn't use that language, but basically that the relation is over. The person who wants some commodity, they may deal with the marketer of that commodity, and when they've got the thing that they want, that's it. You know, the goods were delivered, you've made your payment, the contract is met, see you later. You don't hear from the person again. But with pure devotion, that's not the motivation, and so the relation doesn't break. Those who are completely against the service of the Lord are considered to be in abject darkness. Those who ask the Lord for favor only at the time of necessity are partial recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And those who are 100% engaged in the service of the Lord are full recipients of the mercy of the Lord. Such partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient. And it is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. So what makes someone, one person, a pure devotee? And another person, a struggling devotee. Very simple. It's not like, oh, that person is chosen. There's some souls that are big. They're called Mahatmas. Then there's the smaller sized, regular sized Atmas. And that's just the way it is. Some are Mahatmas and some are Atmas. It's the eagerness for the mercy. That's the again, Rupa Goswami's description or definition, who is eligible for devotional service, and that devotional service means pure devotional service. Please note that's what Rupa Goswami's definition of devotional service. Uttam Bhakti. Bhakti is pure. Bhakti is uttam. That's what bhakti is. It's devoid of those contaminations. So who's eligible for that? Anybody who wants it. Anybody who wants it? Yes, because some people don't want it. Most people don't want it. They want, just like we were discussing earlier, I'll invest some time in my material affairs, then I'll invest some time in devotional service and run parallel tracks. Mixed devotional service. Kijai. And that's not what devotional service is. Devotional service is both feet go in one boat, you cross the river. That's devotional service. What about my career? It's not a problem. Do that. Do whatever it is that you do. And that's even just preliminary. That's just karma yoga. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad shohosi, yad dasi, yad. Prabhupada explains. Lord Chaitanya explains. That's karma yoga. That's just the fruits belong to Krishna. Bhakti yoga is whatever you stay in your position, you hear about Krishna. Because your position is given to you by Krishna. Take it. Accept it. As given by Krishna. Now, from that position, hear about Krishna. Cultivate your attraction for Krishna within your present position. And whatever comes, it belongs to Krishna. There's no problem in offering it to Krishna because it belongs to him. That's where surrender. That's the consciousness of one who has surrendered to Krishna. That's devotional service. Amekam Sharanam. When the Lord descends on this material world by his all-merciful energy, he plays like a human being. Now it's back to his Leela. The transcendental nature of his Leela appears human-like. He appears to take birth. He appears to have childhood. He appears to have mother and father. He appears to have friends. He appears to go to school. He does things like all the rest of us do. He appears quite human-like. But that is not a fact. Despite the apparent manifestations of human-like existence, and despite the appearance of partiality, his mercy is distributed equally. And then Prabhupada gives proof. For example, in the Kurukshetra battle, it appeared Krishna's on the side of the Pandavas, and over there are the Kauravas. Krishna's partial proof. But the disproof of that proof is that those that were on the other side, they achieved their position in the spiritual world. That's pretty nice, huh? Although it looked like enemy, friend, enemy, like we know here. Prahlad Maharaj was astonished. He said to his father, I've heard about this friend-enemy thing, and now I see it in you. Vishnu is the enemy of Hiranyakashipu. And because Prahlad was indicated his clear devotion to Vishnu, he fell in the category of enemy, although he was his son. I'll kill you. Except he couldn't kill him. This goes back to the previous social intercourse dissension. It's due to the influence of time. It's due to the misuse of free will that creates dissension. When there's really no dissension. It's from our side. Misuse of free will problem. Lack of Krishna consciousness problem. And there's a lot of that. Dissension in the age of Kali. So her point is, it's not because Krishna is partial that these things happen. Some are in this harmonious situation, some are in the dissension situation. That's not always just destined that we would be enemies with one another. We can't, using Prabhupada's language, we should not blame our foolishness on Krishna. Kriti's high, huh? It'd be great to have a mother like Kunti. She's got very, very deep. Pandavas are very fortunate. But we're also fortunate through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can hear her wisdom. especially the wisdom of Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be discussed in a forum like this in the Sangha of Vaishnavas. Scriptures are best understood through discussion. And then when we walk out the door, then we apply it. That's the best, very best application. Not just comprehension, but taking that wisdom and living by it. So that when dissension comes, in other words, practical application point one is this. When dissension arises, we can think of Queen Kunti's wisdom. It's just the feature of time. And the feature of time is bringing together particle A and B because there's differences with them towards the will of Krishna. And that's the problem. So how do we address this dissension problem? We give our attention once again to Krishna. At least from our side, we can address ourselves to that. How another living entity addresses themselves to the will of Krishna, that's outside of our domain. But how we address ourselves to the will of Krishna, how we use our free will, where we invest our consciousness, that we have under our jurisdiction. In the next chapter, Bhishma issues similar understanding to Maharaj Yudhisthira. This bamboos clashing in the forest through the movements of the wind is the cause of, is likened to dissension between persons. One doesn't take the blowing of the wind and the one bamboo hitting another bamboo very seriously. It may make a loud cracking sound, but you know what it is. It's perhaps startling to your ears to hear that sound. And there's some sparks that may fly. But life goes on, you just move on. From our side, if we become participants in some dissension or observers of some dissension, our attention should go to Krishna. The solution is not fixing the external part of the problem. We should address ourselves to the internal part of the problem. Our presence or absence of Krishna consciousness. So, that's a nice understanding. And then we have to do it. That's where we invest our consciousness. And if we become practiced at investing our consciousness like that, guess what? We get Krishna's mercy. And what happens when you get Krishna's mercy? You get lifted out of that dissension program. And then when you're out of the dissension program, you can be a resource for those who are in it. And if you're in that dissension program, you're not a resource. Using Prabhupada's language, one person who is bound tightly with ropes cannot untie another person. Only another person who is not bound can come and untie them. You then become a valuable resource within human society if you just do the first thing. As the dissensions and conflicts and calamities and whatever it is, dualities of material existence come your way, you have your consciousness fixed from these understandings that Kunti is passing on. First order of business, bring your consciousness to the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, let me ask myself this question, or others, how can I be of service to Krishna in this situation? Krishna gives some indication. In the mood of service, you can take that up. That's acting from the soul. And the other is acting from the mind. Here comes the material energy. Let me cleverly figure a way out of the material energy. Make a series of adjustments so the calamity goes away. This is practical stuff because we all face these something. If we stop right now and went around the room, you know, ask each person, I'm sure they can identify, yes, there is something that I'm dealing with right now that's stressful. It's a problem. And I'd like the problem to go away. Because the nature of the world we're in, the nature of this place. So, check yourself. Is the first thing that where does your consciousness go? Acting from the soul like this, or acting from the mind? How do I adjust things cleverly and make the atmosphere less problematic? That's an endless program. The endless series of material adjustments that really doesn't do anything but keep you in the material world. It's the wrong program. Delete that program, reinstall a new one. The Krishna Conscious program. It's a choice we all have to make. Kunti's got the program. And it's free. No charge. She'll even help you install it and operate it. It's very nice. Krishna is impartial. We just have to want that mercy of Krishna in our life. And we want that sufficiently. And then not only the problems are resolved by being lifted out of them, but the transcendental nature of Krishna becomes more deeply appreciated by us. The loving reciprocation that we're all hankering for touches our lives. And we feel that. Which gives us inspiration to go further in that loving relation with Krishna. Krishna's ready. He's calling. Through Kunti, he's calling us. Very nice. Text 30. Let us read the translation. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work, although you are inactive, and that you take birth, although you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. This is like her saying, I'm in the class of unintelligent women, and how can I understand you? When she very clearly understands Krishna. So she's doing the same thing again, saying that she's bewildered while she's standing right in front of Krishna and addressing him one to one, O soul of the universe. That you work though you are inactive. That you take birth though you are the vital force and the unborn. It is bewildering. Now, this is addressing the inconceivable nature of Krishna. He's inconceivable because the mind cannot encompass Krishna. Listen to this one. Well, like the Brahma Samhita, Pantashto Koti, Satapat Sarasampragam, Yovayora Tapi Manaso, Manipungavanam. You can, through the instrument of a vimana traveling through space as fast as the wind or as fast as the mind, you can build such a craft that can travel like that. For millions and millions and millions and millions of years, Krishna is still far away. Because Krishna is not approachable through the material energy, through the mind, which is part of the material energy. He's fully spiritual. He's on another plane. And so he's not approachable through the material energy, the mind. So he's inconceivable. One example, so many examples. One example is how Krishna expands and yet is not reduced. Try to think of something that's so big that you take something away from that something that's so big and it's not reduced at all. You can't think of something so big. If you can't think, descend among animals, men, and sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. As for those that don't understand the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. And once that is firmly secured, it's all very, then it's not, we may not understand how those energies are working, that's okay. My Lord, He is wonderful. And then science is just getting some glimpse, some partial glimpse that that's how science began. Just to appreciate the wonder of God and how it is all happening. But then the corner was turned and it was used to disprove the existence of God that's just based upon material laws. Everything is happening. And you have some materialistic philosophy. God doesn't exist. Just material laws primordially exist. Who's the lawgiver? Don't ask that question. Who's the law enforcer? Don't ask that question either. They just exist. Who breaks the law? Don't ask that question either. How do events that there's just an explanation. We don't know what it is. We're working on it, finding out what that explanation is. Science has turned into a tool in the hands of vicious atheists. Prabhupada was very strong on this one. But it didn't start that way. Anyway, there's always something to keep the devotees active, having some opportunity to give the real story. Kunti's doing that here. The devotees therefore know that although he appears among the animals, he is not an animal, nor a man, nor a rishi, nor a fish. He's eternally the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. Thank you. There's just one more verse in this section. So I'll let him do the translation. She now moves into, from, it's such a, the composition is so wonderful. She's moved from showing the inconceivable nature of the Lord's pastimes, although they appear human-like and although they appear wonderful, they're happening by his inconceivable potencies in all cases. And the understanding of him appears to be partiality of the Lord, or his the sufferings of those in this world appears to be his lack of mercy upon those people, when it's not that at all. It's the eternal time just acting according to their free will choices. And now she moves, next verse, she's moving into Vrajalila. Kunti's very high. Verse 31, which is the concluding verse of this cluster. And in text 30, Kunti addresses Krishna as Vishvatma. Vishva Atma, the soul of the universe. Janma karma cha Vishvatman. Rajasya kartur Atmanaha. So this is what Kunti, understanding Krishna as localized, like the localized, Prabhupada uses that feature, the localized aspect of the Supreme Paramatma. The all-pervasive feature, the localized feature, and the personality of Godhead feature. Right? Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. So she understands Krishna very, very prominently as the localized feature, or soul of the universe, Vishvatma. This next verse is where very strongly Mother Yashoda is relating to Krishna differently. She relates to Krishna as her darling son. Then Vishvatma doesn't mean anything to her. She doesn't relate like that to Krishna. So she says, my dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense. Vishvatma committed an offense. And your perturbed eyes overflooded us, they're overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. And you were afraid. Though fear personified is afraid of you, this sight is bewildering to me. So this is a very important part of Damodar Leela that every year we give so much importance to, because it's such an important aspect of our devotional service, and that is appreciating the reciprocation of love from Krishna's side for the love of his devotees. Corresponding to the love of his devotees, Krishna reciprocates with our love. And Mother Yashoda is glorified in such a prominent way during the Damodar month for this Damodar Leela, because she binds Krishna with her love. But it's also Krishna is glorified. This glorious pastime is Krishna agrees to be bound. Here, Kunti is saying not only he agrees to be bound, but he's afraid. You, who are feared by fear personified, become afraid upon seeing a little stick in the hand of Mother Yashoda. You exhibited all the symptoms of fear. You cried. Tears washed the mascara, decorating your little baby Krishna face. You ran from Mother Yashoda. You exhibited all these things of fear. Now, something that I particularly appreciate about this, what she's saying is, this wasn't just play acting. If it was play acting, it'd be easy. Krishna's come as the son of Mother Yashoda, and so she's going to be this, you know, mother that's going to discipline her son, and so she wants to discipline her son, and so he acts okay, she wants to discipline me. And he pretends to be, he play acts to be afraid. That's easy. But you, with the soul of the universe, you literally become afraid of that little stick in Mother Yashoda's hand. How is that? I can't understand. You create universes. You destroy universes. You control everyone. You bring things into being. You withdraw everything from existence, and you hold it in your abdomen until it's time for creation again. And Mother Yashoda is holding a little stick in her hand, and you're afraid. It's very revealing about the nature of Krishna. His omnipotency becomes completely subservient to the love of his devotees. This is Krishna. How strong is this loving nature of Krishna? How strong is the love of his loving devotees, who through their love, they control him? This is inconceivable. But the limit of his inconceivableness is found in these loving relations. And it's one of the reasons why these loving affairs of Vraja are so attractive. The unlimitedness of this inconceivable potency of Krishna is fully blossomed in a great spectacle of colorful arrays of loving exchanges. Aside from the affairs of creating and controlling events in this world, where the controller is controlled. My love. And the exchanges in those loving relations are just spectacular. So spectacular that worldly, scholarly people consider them to be mythology, creations out of the mind of a fanciful poet. Only. And great scholars make such statements. Not only just scholars, even persons that aren't necessarily so scholarly, but consider themselves to be and are considered by the world to be great devotees. Just take a little detour here, but Mahatma Gandhi was one of them. I don't know if you're aware. One time I was visiting in a family's home. We had a late night program. I took rest, and they had to do some cleanup afterwards, so I was up much before they were. And I completed my chanting, and so I went to the library just to see how many of Prabhupada's books were there, and there weren't so many. There was lots of other books. So I noticed one was Gandhi's Dissertations on Bhagavad Gita, so I pulled that off the shelf, opened up the book just at random, and came to the page where Gandhi was writing that Krishna did not exist. Whoa. Said that Krishna, if my existence as a Hindu was dependent upon my acceptance that Krishna factually existed, there was actually a battle of Kurukshetra, and before the Kurukshetra battle, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, I quit being a Hindu. my Krishna is da 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 da. I closed the book, put it back on the shelf. Dissertations on Bhagavad Gita. That's Gandhi. Revered to this day in the world as a lover of Bhagavad Gita. He who chanted Brahm at the time of death and went back to the spiritual world thinking Krishna doesn't exist. I don't know what to say. I just... So what to speak of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill and the killing of Putana and Bakasura and so forth. Mother Jasoda binding Krishna. Nice story. Not a clue. There's no access to this without real devotion. There's no access to it. It remains forever a mystery. Even Kunti is marveling at the mystery. What she's marveling at is the love of Mother Jasoda. What kind of love does Mother Jasoda have that just showing Krishna a stick, he becomes afraid of the stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda? When Mother Jasoda saw Krishna cry, she threw away the stick. And then she got some rope to bind just to prevent him. One is wisdom, you cannot do this. And the other is, I'm going to keep you from causing further mischief. Because she's mother. She's thinking, if I don't discipline my son, when he grows up, what's going to happen? It's my duty. Nanda Maharaj thought the same way. Krishna may be whoever he may be. I'm his father. It is my duty to train him. They're thinking like that. So, Vishvatma. And that's Kunti's conception, Vishvatma. So she has motherly imagined adjusting that one. That's the difficulty for her. Vishvatma, but he does all these things. He comes and touches my feet. He's Vishvatma. He cries. He feels fear. He's Vishvatma. So it doesn't conform with her rasa with Krishna. She has this Aishwarya bhav. She sees Krishna with majesty. All of his opulences. His all these things. Adi Purusha, Adhoksaja, Avyayam, all these things. Supreme, transcendental. And to have apparently worldly frailties doesn't fit. This is divine reciprocation of the love of his devotees. And Kunti's marveling at that. Two sections or clusters of verses remaining. I think we may be able to finish everything if we have a schedule tomorrow like we had this morning. We may be able to finish everything in the morning. So I don't know what that means as far as transportation. Everyone has train tickets. And when are they? Sunday night. Okay. Let's see what happens. A lot depends upon the question and answer session, how vigorous that is.